You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, community, economy, all six areas of the healthful living model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist, and most notably, a advocate for healthful living, and I'm here today with my partner, Julie.
I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant, also with Healthful Living, and I am really excited about our show today.
Today we're going to be talking about, a breakthrough major reality sandwich subject with regard to the fact that it is helping so many people to wake up to the nature of our collective reality and what we need to do as individuals to be aware of what's going on in our environment, take personal action to protect ourselves and our others and our family and our lives and all of our health. And unfortunately, yet again, we are reporting on a major issue of intrusion into our lives and our health by major companies, the government, collusion, stuff that's going on around us. Let us first go for a quick synopsis of today's subject. We're going to be speaking about the light brown apple moth issue, a huge issue here in California. Let's go to an online mock report available at Google. Let's just give this a listen.
It eats cars.
Dude, it don't eat cars either.
Then what's it eat then?
We have confirmation tonight that the light brown apple moth has invaded the Bay Area, wreaking untold havoc on leaves and fruits. Wreaking minor havoc on leaves and fruits. Potentially wreaking havoc in the future, the light brown apple moth, which might turn out to be completely harmless to leaves and fruits, could, however, trigger trade quarantine provisions damaging to agribusiness.
It eats leaves?
No, man. It eats money.
Oh.
Yeah.
It ain't eating my money.
Other people's money.
The light brown apple moth.
So that was a video online that just goes to show you that there is a lot of misinformation as well as some things that don't really make rational sense that are going on with the light brown apple moth. And the bigger problem with this is the spraying that has already taken place and is slated to continue in many more counties for the long term if people don't understand it and do something about it. So that is what we're going to talk about this week and next week. And we have a variety of wonderful experts on. And today we have on Paul Schramsky, who is the state director of Pesticide Watch. And he has all sorts of really good information on what's been going on with legislation and information up to date. And we also have Dr. James Carey, who is a PhD and professor in entomology. And he has extensive background and research into organisms such as the fruit flies and various other pests. So we have both of them on today. We're going to start with a conversation with Paul Schramsky in a bit, but I have Michelle Darby with us, and she is with the California Alliance to Stop the Spray, the San Francisco chapter, and she started out as a concerned mom and is now dedicated her time full-time to this cause. They can be found at cassonline.org. And Michelle, it's great to have you with us today.
Thanks so much.
So tell us, what is going on? What is this light brown apple moth, and what is the spraying they're talking about? Can you give us an overview to get us started?
Sure. Why don't I start with the spray?
Great.
So starting August 17th, spraying, ground spraying and aerial spraying will begin in San Francisco County, Alameda Counties, Contra Costa County, San Mateo, parts of Contra Costa and San Mateo Counties, and Marin Counties. Mm. The spray was postponed in Santa Cruz County due to a court case they just won, and Monterey County is still slated to be sprayed on June 1st. Mm. The program is to have us sprayed once a month for 3 to 6 nights a month for 8 to 9 months a year for 3 to 10 years.
Can you just say that one more time for people listening? Because it's almost overwhelming.
It is. 3 to 6 nights a month for once a month for 8 to 9 months a year, anytime except the rainy season, and for 3 to 10 years or until the moth is, quote unquote, eradicated.
Unbelievable.
And they're using a pesticide that's never been tested for safety. And we have experts who are saying that the eradication program is not going to work and it's not necessary.
Well, that's hopefully we're going to find a lot more information. Martin and I have been doing some research on this. We've been, of course, hearing about it from a lot of our clients and other colleagues and things. And Michelle was one that came to us and said, this is a big problem. What do you know about it? And I said, let's do a show because this is serious stuff. And while I had known about it and while I know enough about pesticides and these types of programs and knew it had to be bad news, I didn't understand the full extent of it until I had time to really sit down and look at it. So that's what we're hoping to do today, is to share with people out there what people need to know about this.
And I mean, when I just was first hearing about this, I was absolutely infuriated. 6 months ago, we covered here on the show the raw milk issue in California, where the government and the CDFA was trying to pull a fast one to sneak something into legislation. They actually did, and with the intention of trying to ban raw milk in California. And I thought, what are you, crazy? Don't you think people are going to get up in arms about this? And you're not going to get away with it. And sure enough, they're not getting away with it. People have been up in arms about this and standing up for their rights. And now, even more egregious, we have the government and big business trying to get in here and spray us with stuff known to be toxic. I mean, this is absolutely outrageous.
It is. And so that's why we really wanted to bring this information to people today and, you know, get the word out there, because I think when people learn more about it, they're going to realize it's not that big of a deal compared to the moth itself is not that big of a deal, but the pesticides and the things they want to use are of a serious concern. So they've already done some spraying in Santa Cruz. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes, they did. They sprayed Santa Cruz counties and Monterey counties. Monterey County got sprayed September and October of 2007, and Santa Cruz County got sprayed in November. And there were lots of reports of illnesses. Unfortunately, the state neglected to set up any infrastructure to have illnesses reported and investigated. So all of the reports are mostly people who self-reported. It's a deplorable situation.
I'm looking here at a complaints of adverse reactions to aerial spraying in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. And here are, I guess what happened was that people self-organized and created ways to report your symptoms. So these are reported symptoms from 643 complaints, from asthma attacks, bronchial irritation, lung congestion, difficulty breathing, wheezing, skin rashes, sometimes severe, blurred vision, eye irritation, sinus bleeding, chest pains, heart arrhythmias, headaches, inability to focus, dizziness, muscle tremors, nausea, you know, the list goes on and on, and including what I thought was strange at first and then I realized later, menstrual cramping, an interruption to menstrual cycles, and in some cases, a recommencement of menstrual cycles after menopause. And then when you hear about the pheromones used, I suppose that makes a little bit more sense, and hopefully we'll talk about that. These are serious, serious conditions. They said that some people had such serious adverse reactions that they required emergency room visits. Some said that the effects of the sprays were so debilitating it made it impossible for them to focus at work or take part in normal activities. And, you know, it's scary. It's really...
And something to keep in mind about this is for Monterey, they were only sprayed twice, and those were the reactions. And Santa Cruz County was only sprayed once, and those were the reactions.
Wow.
We are talking about being sprayed 8 to 9 times a year for years on end. So no one knows what the cumulative effects of all of this is going to be.
Wow.
I mean, or we actually have a good sense of what could happen.
Right. Wow.
Well, from my perspective here as a highly intelligent human being, I have one question. Who are these idiots that are trying to do this? We're going to learn more from our guests in just a few moments, but some of the things that I've learned here, number one, is that this pest is not a problem, hasn't caused any damage. Number two, the strategy that they're trying to use to get rid of it has never been tested. The safety of the stuff that they want to use has never been tested and never been checked out. all because of some loopholes that are being intentionally navigated in order to bring this thing to bear.
And when they tried to eradicate it in other countries like New Zealand, they made it much worse. And so it's not good.
So our common sense indicator here is coming up with a big zero as to why this should even be done, let alone having already been tested on a group of folks down in Santa Cruz.
Well, let's get Paul Schramsky on the line here because he has been studying this and been on the front lines of this for quite a while now. Are you there, Paul?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and you know, a little bit of your background?
Certainly. Well, my name is Paul Schramsky. I'm the State Director of Pesticide Watch and the Pesticide Watch Education Fund. We're a public health and environmental group that works side-by-side with communities to both clean up pesticide pollution and prevent pesticide exposure. And the quick story on how we got involved on this issue is sometime in August, I was actually contacted by someone down in Monterey, an individual with the Fort Ord Environmental Justice Network, who called me and said, Paul, the state is planning to spray pesticides over our communities here in Monterey. And I said to this individual, that's not possible. We don't spray pesticides over urban communities. That just makes absolutely no sense. And the more we looked into it, she was right. The state, the California Department of Food and Agriculture, with very little notice, was planning to spray aerial pesticides over greater parts of the Monterey Bay Area. Mind you, not the eastern rural parts, but the western very urban areas. And this is what raised our first concerns. And since then, as Michelle noted, there have been a series of sprayings in both Monterey and in Santa Cruz, resulting in over 600 reports of adverse health effects. Mind you, those are reports. Many of those complaints represent more than one individual. So you're talking about several hundred individuals that reported some adverse health effect.
Mm. Wow. What do you know what's been going on so far up until this point? I hear there's some new things that just came around very recently, some new wins and things. Give us an idea of the political landscape.
Well, it's definitely been one of the most powerful issues in the state legislature to date, and politicians across the state are paying attention to it. It represents something larger in the state, and that is fundamentally, how do we deal with pests and how do we control pests in California? With increased global trade and with global warming and shifting disease vectors, we're going to face an increasing onslaught of pests in California. And this is just the start. California is figuring out this is the precedent setting for how we deal with the next light brown apple moth, the next pest that enters our borders. Do we choose to spray it with toxic pesticides or do we choose to control it safely and effectively? And that's what this whole issue is deciding. Where we are to date is, after spraying took place, residents in Monterey and Santa Cruz got organized. They called their politicians. They asked them to take a stand. They worked to build support with their federal elected officials. And that we've been doing that for quite some time. We worked with city and county officials to file lawsuits calling for something called an environmental impact report to be conducted prior to spraying. So normally when the state wants to conduct a large-scale environmental project, something that would have some sort of environmental impact, it has to follow something called the California Environmental Quality Act process. It has to conduct one of these environmental impact reports. And unfortunately, because of the, quote, emergency nature of this situation, the state was able to circumvent that. So we ended up with no environmental impact report, looking at no environmental impacts and looking at no health impacts of the proposed spray.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. And now we're at the point where we're able to, with the county and city of Santa Cruz, force the state to stop future spraying until it finishes that environmental impact report. Because of the tremendous political pressure that built over some time, we're able to get five bills and two resolutions entered into the legislature that will try and fix part of this problem. And we've built enough political support that the governor responded and is looking towards doing more significant health testing, but we're going to have to push him even further to do truly comprehensive health testing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes me a little bit nervous that that wasn't even considered beforehand. We're trying to force them to do any of that. It just seems like we have a bit of an uphill battle, but I guess at least they're paying attention to some extent.
Yeah, I think citizens of California have spoken, and I live in Sacramento, and I'm sure you folks hear it more in San Francisco Bay Area, but people in California are paying attention to this issue. Hmm. And they're, you know, the videos on YouTube, the thousands of phone calls and letters into legislators' offices. Assemblymember John Laird, one of the legislators from the Santa Cruz Bay Area, mentioned that he'd received more concerns and complaints about this spray than any other issue since his tenure, and he's been in the legislature over 10 years.
Hmm.
This issue alone is precedent-setting in terms of how we protect our health, how our government informs us about programs that would affect our health and affect the environment, and what role we play in that. Hmm. And I think local control, our determination of our bodies and our rights, will come up more and more as we move along in this debate.
What can you tell us about the spray? I've read certain things that make it sound like, oh, inert ingredients, not pheromones, not pesticides. Tell us about really what the spray is and what we need to be concerned about.
And this is a good question. To be clear, pesticides were sprayed over Monterey and Santa Cruz counties last fall. Those products will not be the same products that are proposed to be sprayed this later this summer, early fall, the next fall. They're actually testing new products, and we don't know what those products are yet, and won't know probably for a few months' time. The products that were sprayed before were a pheromone-based product. So this is the idea that if you use pheromones, which is the natural scent that a moth lets off, it would distract enough of and confuse enough of the male moths that they wouldn't be able to reproduce because they couldn't find their mate.
Hmm.
And so that is the core context of this. That itself, in general, is the right step in pest control technologies. The problem is that the agency took a step in the wrong direction when it included so-called inert ingredients in the product and encased them in a plastic capsule.
Hmm.
So the plastic capsule itself, which is the carrier for the product, is dropped from planes and actually degrades from 30 to 90 days, possibly the new product, in our environment.
Mm.
Those particles themselves, the size of them, are 10 microns, which means you can't expel that from your lungs. This is that very small particle. And according to state agency officials, those particles, because of their size, could remain suspended in the air for up to 12 months. So that's the scary thing there. I mentioned these inert or other ingredients already. Again, inert, the state will use this term a lot. Inert is a misnomer. Inert is a legal definition. The products that are called inert, and there are about a dozen of those in the product, are toxicologically and chemically active. And some of them are suspected carcinogens, things like BHT or tricapril. These are all ingredients of concern. And in laboratory testing, just a quick cursory review of the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health database would reveal that they cause or are suspected to cause tumors or cancers in lab rats, that they cause a whole litany of different health effects. So clearly these so-called inert ingredients raise concerns. We've got a pheromone that was a step in the right direction, canceled out by these toxic ingredients, encased in a toxic plastic. And we all know plastics are a step in the wrong direction.
Right. Wow. How do they get away with calling it inert, or what is that inert definition that they that confuses me a bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, pesticide products for years have included what's called the active ingredient, even if because the active ingredient is the ingredient that is supposed to have the direct target effect on what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
The other inert ingredients may have some effect, but they're not used purposely to kill or harm that pest. So even if in another pesticide product that ingredient might be an active ingredient, because in this specific product, it isn't the primary objective isn't to kill or harm the pest. It is a carrier for the other product,
mm-hmm.
For the other material. It is labeled an inert. And so we're, in fact, that's been a controversy for years and something that industry was able to get away with, and we're trying to move that, and in fact, the Environmental Protection Agency is moving that label from inert to other.
So it's not that inert means not harmful. Inert means not a particular active ingredient in this product, but
that's right.
Can have and many harmful effects.
Exactly. In this specific product, it is not the most active ingredient, but it may have deleterious effects.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Paul, I've got to ask.
Please.
Who is it that wants this to happen? Who's bringing it forward? And whose intention is it to spray millions of Californians with known toxic chemicals without having ever researched the implications of it?
Martin, this is the million-dollar question. ultimately, there are a lot of different culprits in this situation. The state agency, the California Department of Food and Agriculture, has a teeny budget for an agency its size. And one of the only ways that the agency can get funding, federal dollars, are the way to fix its budget. And so when it declares a, quote, emergency, a stream of money is directed at the agency. And so in this case, it declared an emergency and was directed $75 million from the U.S. Department of Food and Agriculture, or U.S. Department of Agriculture. So $75 million is a lot of money. And the agency, it's one way to help fix a lot of holes in the state agency's budget. Well, some of the other folks, you'll hear concerns over whether it's political contributions. Stuart Resnick, who owns the pesticide manufacturer, Sutera, stands to benefit quite a bit of money if his product is used, and he is one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's major donors. He donated over $144,000 in the last election cycle. So there is some question of collusion there, and the fact that he's also a donor of all of the major members of the Ag Committee here in California, the Assembly Ag Committee. So there are clearly some concerns there, but a lot of that is just normal old politics. You know, the question is ultimately at the international and federal level, how we deal with these pest problems. And in some sense, we've been trying to play international politics with trade policy for so long, we've lost track of our tit-for-tat attitude. And right now, we're in trouble because part of it is we, for so long, tried to keep out certain goods or from entering our marketplace from other countries, certain agricultural goods, that now we've gotten stuck with this one. So we, for so long, tried to regulate the way Canada and Mexico dealt with the light brown apple moth, even though it wasn't a pest, just to tit and for tat them for some other good. And now that we found it in our own borders, we're in trouble because they're going, hey, you quarantined us, we're going to quarantine you.
Mm.
And so, again, this is part of this, it's almost beyond imagination, is the high level of international trade policy behind all of this.
Mm.
But everyone's got a hand in it. It's the state agencies, it's the state executives, it's everyone.
So it's going to mean a loss to a lot of money for the people that won't be able to export their products. That's just one of the ways, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And that is one of the big concerns you'll hear from California's farmers, is the inability to export their goods because of these quarantines. And so you'll see that ultimately, instead of being a question about the fact that they are spraying pesticides over urban areas to try to, quote, eradicate a pest that has done absolutely no damage in California, becomes a very tricky argument. In fact, it is part of the sort of, I would say, public relations move to pit agriculture against California consumers.
Hmm. Wow. Well, this is amazing. We are going to take a short break and be right back. You are listening to Reality Sandwich Radio. You're listening to Julie and Martin Matthews, and we are here with Paul Schramsky and Michelle Darby, and we are going to be next speaking with Dr. Carey, and we will be back after this short break.
Damn.
How will we kill the moth, Roger?
From airplanes, Gina. The planes will spray a mist of microscopic plastic pellets.
Pellets?
Pellets so small you could breathe them right into your lungs. You wouldn't even know.
But the moths will...
The moth population will be devastated. Wrecked. Hopefully. It might not work, actually. They're not sure.
But But at least it's safe. It has been fully tested, right?
This is an emergency, Gina. The government has waived testing requirements in order to meet.
They skipped the testing?
There is no time for that. But when they did a trial spray over Monterey and Santa Cruz last fall, there were over 600 medical complaints of adverse reactions.
Okay, but
dizziness, headaches, skin rashes, vomiting, wheezing,
what?
Asthma attacks, diarrhea.
Bottom line, Roger, the spray is safe, the spray isn't safe.
Best way to know for sure. Spray it over a large population and see what happens.
Wait a minute.
You are listening to KPOO San Francisco Reality Sandwich. If you want to get this show or any of our past shows for any of your friends to listen to, you can go to realitysandwichradio.com. So we are back on the line here. We should have both Paul Schramsky and Dr. Carey both on the line with us. And I just, before we let you go, Paul, I just wondered, is there anything else that citizens should know? Is there a way they can sign up or get involved so that they can stay on top of this?
Yeah, and Michelle can definitely add to this, but ultimately the governor of California has the chance to both stop the spray and conduct truly comprehensive environmental and health testing of both the product and its impacts. And so folks should take the time to call the governor, spend the time to send him emails and share their concerns about this spray program and urge him to take the right steps to protect the health and safety of our communities. To get more involved, folks should visit www.stopthespray.org and sign the petition opposing the spray, or visit castonline.org to get involved in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, so now we're going to see, we should have Dr. Carey, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, it's wonderful to have you on.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I understand that you are an expert at entomology and pests and pest management and the light brown apple moth as well.
Well, my specialty is in what would be called invasion biology, and so the concept here would be, if you can understand a virus but not the disease, the same way you can understand the light brown apple moth but not really understand the invasion concept. So,
look, I served on the scientific advisory panel for California Food and Ag from 87 to 94 for the Mediterranean fruit fly, and so that my specialty that I developed was the general area would be invasion biology, and I liken that to, you can have a lot of knowledge about, in this case, a light brown apple moth, but not know about its invasion. It's a different concept, in the same way you might know a lot about a virus but nothing about the disease it causes. And so when I come in, I'm not an expert on the light brown apple moth per se. Nobody really in the state is, because it hasn't been here. You can't study it. But on the other hand, you can certainly understand the broader concepts of the invasion. And so that when I first was asked to comment on this and looked at the data, it just was immediately apparent that this thing, this pest, has been here a very long time. It's spread from, Monterey County and even south from that, all the way north to Sonoma County, and, of course, right through the Bay Area. And this has been here, my estimate, 30 to 50 years.
Hmm.
It's just really well established, and this is not an emergency in the sense that if we don't do something right now, it's going to get away. It's been here a long time.
So are we just finding out about it? Why, you know, it seems like all of a sudden they're calling it this emergency. Did we not know that this moth had been around for all these years before that?
Well, an entomology professor, retired now, Jerry Powell at UC Berkeley, caught it at a light trap, I guess it was last year. And, it was just by accident that the populations clearly had to be fairly high for this thing to stumble into a light trap. And that's when, he sent a specimen. Actually, first went to Australia for an ID, but then later to Sacramento where they ID'd it, and then they decided that they needed to intervene here. But it's Yeah, they just discovered it, and then the USDA believes that it's mandated to go after these things.
So if it's been around for all of these years, and we didn't even know it was here,
right.
It must not be that big of a problem, I'm guessing.
It's really not. And, you know, I understand that the USDA has to make a list of potential pests, and they have some criteria on, that would place these pests, in this case the light brown apple moth, on a what they call a Class A list. It's a blacklist, basically. And so that would be a long list. But then when you find these things, you've got to revisit that and say, first, should it be on this list? And secondly, and as importantly, it's so widespread that is it feasible to eradicate? I mean, mm-hmm. They didn't revisit this. It was simply automatic that they went after this thing.
Wow. Let's do this. Let's take a quick short break here. We're going to come right back on the line. We're going to be talking to Dr. Carey about the light brown apple moth and what has been going on and what people need to know. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. We are back. You are listening to Reality Sandwich on KPOO. So we are speaking with Dr. Carey, who's a professor of entomology, and he was telling us about the light brown apple moth and actually how it's been around for quite a while. You said maybe 30 to 50 years, you mentioned.
That's my estimate, a very long time.
Wow. And so it sounds like what it sounds like the state and some people have been saying is that, oh, this is an emergency. We need to spray because we need to eradicate it so it doesn't take hold and whatever, cause a problem. But it sounds like it already is established. It already has taken hold.
No, that's exactly right. You know, there's about three what we'd call preconditions for going forward with a program that really all three have to be in place. Before you launch one of these things, eradication is very difficult and certainly costly and so forth. Anyway, first off, you need a good tool. That is a tool to control these or kill them or whatever. In this pheromone, I was on just a while when Paul was on, and this is not going to work. Even in entomology, there's problems with the use of what they call mating disruption, with the pheromone. And it doesn't control these moths, even in the orchard, that well. And eradication has to be taken to a whole new level. Eradication is difficult because you're not dealing with a LBAM population. You're dealing with 100,000 of these populations. Just like I use the analogy of metastatic cancer. It's not a tumor. It's typically metastases. And so that anything short of 100% kill or effectiveness is really control or remission concept, because any one of those metastases or little pockets of LBAM populations can regenerate the entire population. That's why it's so difficult, but this tool simply won't work. And then secondly, it's just widespread, as we were just talking about, is that, my goodness, this thing is over 8,000 to 10,000 square miles. That's huge. It's huge. And then thirdly, even eradication, you need to have public support, because you have to have the public on your side in the advanced stages, or for that matter at any stage, but certainly in the advanced stages. You need to get into backyards, you need to monitor and so forth. You just have to have public on your side. And so all three of those, there's just big problems with each one of them, and that's why this is really a poorly thought through program.
So...
And just to clarify, Doctor, this moth has not caused any damage.
Not so far that anybody can tell. That's right.
What do you know? What was so for people listening? LBAM is light brown apple moth.
Correct.
What are the concerns about it, or I guess why is this considered a problem?
Well, there it comes back to that Class A pest status, where it's in a category, but it shouldn't be there, but it's somebody put it there, and they shouldn't have, in the same category as some of these big pests like medfly and so forth. And so that they, here it is, it appears, and so that they're mandated to go after these things, but it's mandated only in the sense that if you can actually eradicate. And so you get into quarantine problems. See, there's really two levels here of any of these exotic pests that are in this Class A. One, you have the other states where they could survive, and also countries where they could survive, that will quarantine produce shipped out of California. In other words, you can't ship it. And then, so that would be the quarantine level, and that's basically a presence-absence concept. And then you get into the direct damage, which is just the control concept. But right now, what CDFA, California Food and Ag, is dealing with is, or their argument, is simply the quarantine concept. But in fact, even there, you know, it's shipping any of these is really an agreement between a buyer and a seller. And so that's where even these trade policies need to be revisited as well. And so any state or any country that quarantines us, they know that we can also play the same game when they have their problems. And so, you know, it's just you need some negotiation here.
So if I did my research correctly, I believe you did a lot of work with the medfly. And, give us an idea. Give us a comparison. There are times when a pest is really an emergency and a problem and you really do want to do an eradication versus maybe something like that. This that isn't?
No, that's right. I mean, the medfly, look, this the LBAM issue of the moment brings to the surface the huge problems with these exotic pests, because what California Food and Ag is doing is many times what they call, a legislative eradication. But the saying is that you can't legislate a pest out of existence, you know. It's always there. So even with the medfly, when they find these things, they launch a program, they basically beat it back, beat it down until it's sub-detection, declare eradication. It's not really gone, but they declare it so that they can ship produce. In those cases, you know, you've got to go after it at some level. I mean, you can't go aerial spray, you know, pesticides and everything, but they've got to go after it some way. But this one, it's just too widespread. I mean, even if it was a medfly over this area, I'm not so sure that they wouldn't have to kind of revisit what they do in that category. I mean, with that. I've testified before, and I say that, you know, there's some mountains you can't move, there's some cancers you can't cure, and there's some pests you cannot eradicate. No matter how much you'd like to, you simply cannot.
Mm. Dr. Carey, this is Michelle Darby here. I'm wondering, so the medfly, in comparison to the light brown apple moth in regards to damage to crops, could you speak to that?
Well, I just say on a scale of 10, I'd give the medfly right up there. Use that as kind of a standard because it is just an international quarantine pest. I'd call it a 9 or 10. The light brown apple moth, I'd call it about a 1 or maybe a 2. I don't even know if it should even be on the scale because it's just really a minor pest. Every entomologist I've talked to, even though I don't do the integrated pest management per se, I'm plugged into this. I've been in Davis here for 28 years. My goodness, I know entomologists in the state and so forth. But there's not a one, first off, that thinks that this pest can be eradicated. Not one. And secondly, there's not one that I've talked to that does this integrated pest management that thinks the light brown apple moth is going to be much of a pest. It'll simply be controlled along with, you know, the ongoing control programs the growers do anyway. And so, you know, this idea that you have economic, I know California Food and Ag uses economic damage assessment reports and so forth. It all comes down to your assumptions. If you assume that LBAM is the only pest out there, you get one number. If you assume, as this would be a more realistic assumption, that it'll be part of a whole complex of pests already out there, then you get another number, much, much lower, probably very little damage.
So if it's not possible to eradicate it, so this spraying every month for years and years and years is an attempt to try to get at all of that, but you mentioned that there's all these little pockets and it's virtually impossible to do, what would be, I think you mentioned the farmers already have certain methods. What can people do? What is a better way, since eradication seems like an impossible task?
No, that's right. That's a great question. So, look, I mean, I'm not here saying don't do anything. I'm simply saying be smart about the policy. This is a lot of money. What they're going to end up doing is, this eradication program that's doomed to failure before it even, you know, launched, really, in any kind of big way. And so that what they'll do is have the pheromone sprayed all over these urban areas and still have LBAM and is spreading to all the rest of the state. An alternative policy, and one that I think is much more realistic, is one of containment. is that, you know, it's here. You can't do anything in these urban areas, really, but you may want to protect the valley or some of the places where you think it. The valley may be a little bit too hot, but on the other hand, there's places where they have major agriculture regions where you can slow the spread. They do the same thing with the gypsy moth back east. They understand they can't eradicate gypsy moth, but they can slow the spread. And it's basically, you know, buffer zones where they're intensive trapping. They put out their pheromone and so forth. So I think a policy like that would be much more realistic.
Hmm. And it sounds like much better for everyone, including...
Absolutely, right. I think, I mean, even another policy, I know that CDFA would get upset with me. Well, they're upset with me anyway, but anyway, with me saying this, but if they did nothing, I don't think it's going to matter. Just the entomologist I talk to is just going to be another pest, another leaf roller. That's the category of pest it is. It doesn't attack the fruit, per se. It attacks the leaves.
But it doesn't attack them in enough of a way that it would destroy the crops themselves?
That's right.
So... in our just closing couple minutes, because I wanted to just ask you, as a scientist, what work are you doing on this front line? How are you being drawn into this this argument?
Well, that's another good question, because I was at a meeting. I do insect demar. I have aging. I do use insects as models for aging, so it's a different area right now. But I was contacted when I was down at Newport Beach at a meeting by a group in Monterey, and. Again, as soon as I saw the extent of spread and how they were going at it, I just decided, with my background in invasion biology, my experience on California Food and Ag's panels, that I needed to step up, because there's nobody, there's the stakeholders in agriculture, but the public in general is a stakeholder as well, and I just felt that I needed to step up because I had some expertise here. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to bring to the table here, but I don't see in the future going and, researching LBAM or anything like that.
Mm. Well, we applaud your efforts, and we appreciate you joining us today on the show and sharing us more of the truth and the reality of this matter, that there's a major program in place here that simply will not work and is absolutely worthless to do.
Well, yes. Is there anything else that it might be important for people to know or help them feel that it's important to stand up against this? Anything else about or anything they can get involved with that you think is important?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's once I go to the activist side of things, I lose all my scientific credibility, and so I try to stick to science and so forth. But on the other hand, my just gut feeling is that this program, it's not just not going to work. I think that there's enough public outcry here where it's inconceivable to me that they could pull this off. It really is. Mm. For whatever, multiple years and multiple sprays per year, my goodness. It just, it's a misguided program. And so if that's, I don't know if that's probably no comfort, but that's how I see it. Mm-hmm. I just don't see ultimately that they're going to be able to pull it off. But because even programs like this and so forth, you know, as the word gets out how wrong-headed this whole thing is, and to subject, the public to what's called involuntary risk, and is just really unbelievable. So we'll see.
Wow. Well, thank you for doing everything you're doing to help support all of us with your expertise in getting this important information out there.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. This is why, everyone, we wanted to have this conversation on today, because it's really important, and it's almost unbelievable, really, that we're even having this conversation, given that there really isn't even a problem.
Well, it really is a defining moment, I think, in our time as, as a society here, where we've got something so invasive, so ungrounded, so problematic, so clearly with, people of influence with their hand in the coffers, right, trying to pull something off that's so deleterious to millions of people. Mm. I think of this and I think, do they think that we're stupid?
Yeah.
I mean, they must. They really must think that the people are stupid, that the citizens are passive, that we'll just lie down and take, anything and whatever they want to do, and that we're not going to notice what's going on behind the curtain. Michelle?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you have a good point, and I think it's going to backfire because I know so many people who are now activists because of this who never were before. And I think once that activist spirit gets awakened in people, it will not shut off. Mm. And what they've essentially done in this area is to fire us up and get us awake, to wake us up to the injustices that are occurring. And it once this is done, and hopefully we can beat this, hopefully we'll be celebrating on the streets in 3 months that we've won. But once that's done, our eyes are open to the way procedure happens in this country, and more people will fight.
Absolutely. And not just take the one-sided expertise that they're going to start thinking, who's behind this and who might gain from this and how might we lose or how might we not be getting the full story? So I guess even though it's an upsetting and scary thing that it's even happening, I definitely agree with you that, when you get too outrageous and become too ludicrous, then the whole thing blows up.
Yeah, everything gets called into question.
Right.
You kind of say, if that injustice was so easy to pull over on people's eyes, what else?
Mm-hmm.
And while that notion is tremendously unsettling, it's also empowering because we have to realize that systems that don't serve us do need to ultimately break down and change, and that we, the people who are connecting with one another, who are sharing our passions on this issue and others, will be the ones who design and co-create new systems that do serve us. And it's appropriate that we're talking about this today on May Day, historically a day of the people, day of the worker, day of human rights. And I also just want to mention that also today is the day that our friend Congressman Ron Paul's new book, The Revolution, A Manifesto, is being released very, very apropos for this subject. We're going to be speaking more about the light brown apple moth issue on next week's show as well. Hopefully, Michelle can come back. We'll have some other guests. We're going to learn more next week about how other countries have approached this issue, how it can be dealt with in a natural, normal, healthful kind of a way, not unlike how many other problematic issues can be dealt with healthfully. We'll learn more about that, and we'll also learn more about just what we were touching on here at the end of the show about how this is invigorating public consciousness, how people are organizing around this issue, and how that's going to serve all of us going forward in many, many respects as we deal with increasing invasiveness by government and corporate collusion.
Absolutely. So you are listening to 89.5 FM Reality Sandwich on KPOO. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon. And if you want to hear this show or any past shows, you can go to realitysandwichradio.com and listen to it. Thank you so much.
Next week.